Welcome to Season 2 of the Let's Check In podcast, a place where cultural icons and frontline experts share how they navigate life's wobblier seasons. I'm your host, Susie McAvale. Let's check in.
How can fashion be both a powerful form of self-expression and a catalyst for positive change? In today's episode, we're diving into the inspiring story of Fatuma and Lorinda Denzarco, the visionary sister duo behind Collective Closets. Since 2016, their Melbourne-based brand has been shaking up the fashion world with bold colours, timeless designs, and a deep connection to their African heritage. From exclusive collaborations with Market Lane Coffee, Acme for the Goddess, Power, Glamour, Rebellion exhibition, to joining the Australian Fashion Now showcase in New York, Collective Closets is not just about clothing. It's about celebration of culture, community, and empowerment. Born out of their love for their late mother Stella, a talented seamstress, Fatuma and Lorinda fuse vibrant African textiles with Melbourne's effortless style, all while advocating for slow fashion with sustainable, ethically made collections. So join me as we explore how Fatuma and Lorinda are building a brand that's redefining self-expression, community, and the power of women, changing the way we think about fashion, and why dressing with intention is more important than ever. Fatuma, welcome to the Let's Check In podcast. It is an absolute pleasure to have you here.
Oh, you made it sound so cool.
It's all true, people. It's all true. Now, I have to say, from the very first moment that I saw your clothes, I was hooked.
Oh, wow.
And anyone who I have convinced to open their phone and look up your brand, if you haven't done so already, they're also hooked.
Oh, that's so lovely. Thank you.
So let's get into it. What inspired the creation of Collective Closets? And really, how did your, I guess, personal journeys lead to launching a fashion brand that bridges both African and Australian heritage?
Yeah, that's a question that is really interesting because as we've had it for a little while now, it's one of those questions I keep having to ask myself so we can always stay on track on where we're at, because it's easy to be really kind of like, I don't know, distracted by why you started a brand. We started it just basically because we loved fashion. We both trained at university to do separate things because we came from a really practical family. I think lots of African families are quite practical. You know, they're immigrant families that want you to go to university, have a career, and that work really hard and do that. Mm. And so as we did that, we weren't really satisfied. Even though we had these professional career paths, we were like, we want a bit more. And something that was always really big from when we were growing up was fashion. We grew up in a house where my mum sewed all the time. I would pick out friends' clothing for like dates. I pick out buttons. I would definitely be at Lincraft once a week. So once we realized that we were making our own clothes and all of our friends and people at school really loved it, Lorinda and I always knew. Lorinda wore, like, made her own, I don't know, formal dress. And it was a hit. People were like, oh my God, 21st dresses. We did that. And I think that we realized that we had something. Our point of view was a bit different. We loved all the classic silhouettes, but we wanted something a bit more bold. We had a bit of a little fashion business that was a little bit of a disaster, where it was called Grandma's Finest, where we loved vintage fashion. So what we did was we would buy a heap of vintage fashion and then we'd upcycle it. So we would get it tailored, we'd take the arms off, and then we would sell it. And at the start, it went really, really well because people loved that kind of vintage fashion, but we were doing it in more contemporary styles. We'd take it in, we'd make it shorter, we'd patch anything that was a little bit overworn. And then we were putting it up on eBay, but it was taking up so much of our time and all the good stuff would get sold and we'd just be left with a room full of clothes. We did markets, our hours were so long and labor intensive. So then Lorinda was getting married and she was getting married in Kenya, Nairobi. And we were like, what are we going to do with Grandma's Finest? And we're sitting there at a cafe working it out and a group of Maasai people had come in with these amazing shukas, which is the bold check that we use. And we were like, that's what we're doing.
I've got goosebumps.
Yay. And it was a really beautiful moment because it was like we were there in the country feeling super, super inspired, listening to these stories. When she's getting married, a lot of that ceremony is about sharing stories from her in-laws' point of view, from everyone around them, everyone pictures these amazing stories about how rich life could be, how much love. And we were like, oh, this is really interesting. It's pretty impactful when people talk about things in a bigger way. Lots of people are married, but what does that really mean?
Yeah.
And so we start to break that down in our brand. What does it really mean to share stories? What does it really mean to produce clothing? And so for us, we worked out at that point that anything that we're going to do was about sharing what those textiles were for the community, for what it meant for us. And also we wanted to go back to what we loved, which was fashion and fun and really classic silhouettes. And also like having grandma's finest, we knew what people loved. So that's how we started it. And we then made like a promise to each other that our responsibility was to share the African culture in the way that we knew it from. We're not from Kenya, but we are from Angola. But we had a responsibility not to just be like, here's cool clothes. It was like, these are the people that make it. These are the stories. This is what it means.
Yes.
So that's how it was born. And I think that that's why it really resonates with people, because it's fashion with a bit more.
Oh, wow. That's such a powerful story. There's so much meaning and purpose in the story that you just told about the wedding. That's 100%. An incredible thing that I think our world needs more of.
We've been around for a while, and when we hadn't produced a collection for a year and we're still getting emails just like, when are you coming back? Oh, what's happening? And I think that's what it's a testament to, because I don't know many brands that I am so yearning for another piece.
Totally.
So it's nice that like we're able to give a lot more than just clothing. Like whether you buy or not, you can still go to the website or you can still engage in a campaign and get something more out of it than just fashion.
Yeah, absolutely. How do you ensure that every garment you create speaks really to the values of artistry, purpose and empowerment for the modern woman?
Yeah, that's an interesting question. I think as we do our process, I mean, like it's a bit more streamlined as we go, but I think we ask ourselves, why are we doing it? Back to that question, yeah. Why are we creating these items and what does that mean? And as our audience grows or grows up, I should say, there are different requirements of what I believe is what a lot of our customers are feeling is what we're feeling. Mm-hmm. So like I'm at a phase now of my life where it's not about babies, it's not about all of that stuff. It's more about like dressing to be powerful, dressing to make myself happy.
Yeah.
And so when I look at this new collection, that's what it does. And that's what we tend to do. Our body shapes. Are we considering women with boobs?
Yeah.
Are we considering who are we talking to? And what are those women doing? Where are they up to in their part of their lives? I think because we're so conscious about that and we're only making not hundreds of pieces, we're only making a really small amount. We want to make sure that everything that we are selling can go with what they're currently wearing, what we've produced before. Does this work with last year's season's pants? Can you wear it out? Could you wear it formally? We try and tick a lot of those boxes. We don't want to make clothes for the sake of making clothes. We want to make clothes that last. We also want to make clothes that then you can, you know, you can add in to get your dopamine hit or to make you feel happy, or it's just a really good cut. So that's how we think of our collection and think about what we're doing. And this year we did this thing where, because the economy is a little bit crazy, we know that our customers might be in a very similar situation where they're thinking about mortgage repayments, costings of stuff. We've then gone, okay, how are we going to bring this collection and try and keep it at an affordable range? So we went to all of our suppliers and said, what do you have that you're not going to use that fits this criteria that just needs a second life? And we actually built the collection out of that. The dead stock. I mean, we've got some new stuff, but like a majority of it was, what can we do to then get at a more affordable price? And I don't know how many brands do that, but I mean, it's great for us because A, it means that the collection is all under $200. B, that we're making sure that we're using dead stock. And then we're actually combining our sugar this year with all of these amazing like cottons. So yeah, just a different approach.
We were just talking about this coming in, is slow fashion. And that's such a core part of Collective Closets that you just spoke about. Can you break down what it really means to you and why it's important in today's fast-paced fashion industry?
Yes. Well, for us as a business, it means being able to actually make clothes that we know, A, will be sold, B, we're more considerate. Because we know that we're not making hundreds of items, we're making a good amount, but we're also making sure that everything goes with each other. And so when we say, when we talk about it being slow, we're like, we're only doing one season a year. We're not doing summer, we're not doing four seasons. To be honest, in Melbourne, is there? I think there's like two seasons. Really,
yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
And it's about actually like thinking about that climate. Where are we? I mean, I think I was in New York in November. I feel like that actually really applies to globally. Those seasons are actually not as big as they used to be. Mm. They're not that distinct. They just melt into each other and every year's different. This season or this collection actually you can wear in summer. These four items you definitely can wear in summer. This you can wear in winter. This you can wear in autumn. So making it sure that we're producing things that are literally considered and thoughtful, but then the person can actually wear them all year long and they're getting the most from it. Mm. I feel like the internet or Instagram or Facebook or TikTok, I feel like all these brands are screaming at us and they're screaming buy, buy, buy a lot of the time. They're not actually screaming anything that authentic or that interesting.
Yep.
And so for us, we're like, no, if you want that, there are thousands of brands. For us, this is what we're doing. We're staying in our lane and we're making sure the connections that we're building are really strong with our customers, the earth, our people, our community, and also telling and putting things into the atmosphere or into the zeitgeist that actually resonate with who we are as people and as a brand that we want to be. And I think it's one of those things, it's like when people say slow fashion, I wonder, because there's not one meaning of it.
Yes.
And, it's easy to just put it and attach it, but I wonder how much that kind of reflects to their actual practices. Often.
That's a really good point. Really, in a lot of ways, you're trying to redefine the landscape of fashion. How do we do that in a world that we're living in where resources are finite?
What I've noticed is, and I know this is a little bit off track, but I do think that a lot of people want slow fashion, but they live a fast fashion life. Mm. What I mean by that is this. They love the idea of investing in brands that are ethical and, especially smaller brands. I think a lot of consumers put a lot of weight onto smaller brands to tick these boxes. They wouldn't put that same weight onto a Gucci. Like, they would not even ask that. Or Hermes, they're like, oh, where are these bags made? No one would put that on, but for a smaller brand that they do. But what I also notice is a lot of consumers want to wear different clothes because they want to look really cool on an Instagram. They want to look fresh. They want to look fast. You know what I mean? Mm. It's very rare that you'll go into a lot of influencers that I like and they are wearing the same clothes more than four or five times. So a lot of people say to me, like, I want to invest in that. But the way that they actually live their lives and what they require is a bit more fast fashion.
Which is probably a reflection of our fast-paced world, I would assume.
100%.
Right?
So it's hard to keep true to our business sometimes when we'll put out a collection of people be like, what's next? And I'm like, what? We've just spent 8 months putting this together.
Crafting this, yeah.
Because they are used to that, you put out a photo, it's a couple of likes and everyone's moved on by the end of the day. Mm. So it is trying to work out how to stay relevant, how to do things a bit differently, where you appear to be fast, but you're still going down to your slow world.
Where things are at the moment across the world, rising shipping costs, extended lead times. How do you maintain your commitment to that quality and sustainability while you're still staying true to your business values?
Yeah, this has been a big one. This year, especially with this collection, we've had to be really crafty in the way that we've done everything to keep those costs down, because ultimately, as much as we love producing this, it is a business at the end of the day, and we need to make sure that we're covering all the costs. So what we did, again, we went down to the dead stock. We talked to all of our suppliers. We had a really frank conversation with them saying, are you able to put this on this for hold? What we've started to do is make to what we think we can sell. But if it goes really well, we want the opportunity to be able to, still look at some other items that you might have. We've decided to also make sure that everything is considered. So what buttons didn't we use the last couple of years? What zippers? Like, actually look into what hasn't been used and repurpose that. With us also just looking at the landscape, as much as we'd want to sell at this amount of price, if our consumers or women that look like us can't afford to buy it, then it's not really worth building a brand that doesn't then reflect our values. Mm-hmm. So yes, we probably had to take a smaller cut internally as a business, but I think that what it will then, we hope it does, especially now that we're, changing our supply chain, we're definitely going to Nairobi next year to produce, so setting up a more ethical, sustainable route there. Wow. Yeah, getting everything made, bringing a team together, only because we're also bringing all the fabrics from there. It was a bit of a, waste of resources in terms of shipping it all here and shipping it all back. So we've decided to, but also telling that story. If you looked at our vision board 5 years ago, 6 years ago, one of the things was always to be more authentic in that storytelling and really employ the people that make it and really tell that story. Even though this season we're not doing it, next season it's going to look a lot different and we can go back to more of those sustainable practices that we've really wanted to hone into.
How exciting.
I know. It's very daunting because Lorinda's moving there.
Oh, really? Yeah. Like permanently?
Yeah. Well, her in-laws are there as well. Yeah, this is the big part of it. And we need to be there, definitely. We've tried to do it the last few seasons and produce a few items there, but it's hard when one of us isn't fully across it.
Yeah.
So we realise that one of us needs to be there, but it's also really exciting.
Wow.
Yeah, and you'll see that story come around really unpacking it, unfolding it, meeting all the makers. I think it'll be quite special.
That's super exciting. When we talk about fashion, it's so often seen as a form of self-expression, which is the beautiful part of it. That really does resonate a lot with me. How do you want your designs to make people feel when you wear them?
Yeah, this is a good question because I used to work in the shop when we had it and I'm often in the showroom. And so I get a direct feedback from all of our customers. And I think because we're using bold colours, because Lauren and I are also women that are a bit more shapely, like we've got butt and we've thought about it. So when women come to us, they're looking for that. They're like, wow, so many brands are addressing this or that. Or we do a lot of tailoring as well. And so for us, we know that, and it's part of what we do, like we pick colours that are going to be bold and then we tell people like, this is the reason why. And so we've been often told, oh my God, I wear your clothes when I'm presenting or when I'm nervous or when I have a special occasion because it does make me feel powerful. So maybe it's the colours, maybe it's the full set, maybe it is that like you walk into a room and everyone's like, whoa, that does make you feel special. And people get compliments. And I think that there's nothing better than wearing an outfit where someone's like, hey, Susie, you look amazing. And I think that people come to us for that as well. And so I think we've built a reputation for that, that you stand out and people will come to you. And whether because you're being bold wearing those colours or whether it looks really great on you, people think they're like, okay, Collective Closets is my brand when I want a compliment.
And it's got real soul.
Yeah, 100%.
Yeah.
And like I said, I think the tailoring aspect, when we added that to the business, we also felt that was something that really changed the way that we could see people would come to us because all body shapes are not the same. And I think that like even height is a big thing. Like you take a pair of pants just up by 3 centimetres, it changes the whole pants. And not enough brands actually address that. It's not that you have to change. It's the garment needs to adapt to you. And I think that, you know, I probably tailor most of my clothing because I realise that like when a brand's making it, they're not making it exactly for me.
Yeah.
They're making it for all women. And so I think that it's nice when brands then extend or have an offering or a service that then makes them find themselves in the clothes by adjusting and making these little things that then enhance their best part of their body.
So talk to us about the tailoring aspect of the business.
Yay.
And how that works.
So we have a showroom. We're going to have a new one when we launch this one where people just come in. I've got pins. I've got needles. Literally, people put on a garment. I'll tell them to bring the shoes that they're going to wear it with. And then we literally just tailor it to them. It's an extra $10, so it's not even that expensive.
Oh,
we don't make any money off that. We just get whatever our tailor will charge us. We just, like, because there's no point for us. We want to make sure that you find something. And sometimes tailoring can be expensive and that could be the difference.
Yeah.
We're like, no. This is what the cost price is and we'll keep that. And then we just do the little tailor. It takes 2 weeks and then we send it out. You pick it back up.
Amazing.
It's really nice and simple. Yeah. And sometimes it's just like a little waist in. It's all a little simple, a cuff. Just a little bit, like, you know, taken in of. It's just those little things that then transform it. And it also personalizes it to yourself. Yeah. And then sometimes we'll keep in a bit more of it. And we say, you put on an extra kilo, let it out, you know?
Yeah.
It's all the little things that you consider about being a woman and embracing your body.
Yeah. And we do. We fluctuate.
Yeah.
We all have that thing where
100%.
We're.
100%.
Yeah. Fatima, you are a successful entrepreneur and creative. I really want to know, how do you navigate the constant juggle act between career, personal life and passion? Is there such thing as true balance or is it really about finding harmony in the chaos?
Yes. I was talking to someone the other day. I had a really interesting brunch with quite a successful person that I find amazing. And we were talking about it and we're saying that I think it's the two things. I think it's a personality type. I thrive when I'm doing a million things.
Yeah.
I often find that my life a little bit mundane when I'm doing one or two things, or just one. If I'm just at home being mum, I'm a bit like, oh God, what's happening next? I also think that that is like that illusion of you can do it all. It all looks like that. I think everyone's driven by different things. Everyone wants to live very different lives. Some of my friends want a perfect garden. I've never been in our garden since we bought our house. I intend to one day, but it's just not where I find
never set foot.
Yeah. Sorry. But I've done a million other things. So for me, I love the chaos of it all. I think it is about that personality type. I often am not fazed. I remember when my son was super little, me and my mother's group would have a lunch at, a wine at Marion, just like between this weird hour. And if our babies cried, we're just like, out, no, you know what I mean? It's like, babies are crying, go. And it never fazed me, where some of my friends would be like, what? Helen's like, as soon as it goes away, you tap your card and you go and you're out. You know what I mean? I really thrive on that. I know life is not perfect. And I think that that's the best part about it. I think that our business is never going to be perfect. And I love it. You know, it's hard work. You know, we definitely didn't start it to be like, you know, millionaires. We started it because we loved it. And through it, we're just working out the kinks and each year gets better.
Yeah.
And each year is unpredictable. The pandemic, you know, the economy, we've never been able to control anything. So if you're starting a business with control, trust me.
You got something coming.
Yeah, 100%.
So you touched on a really great point just before. Often what we feel when we're uncertain is this element of fear. And the way to overcome that fear is to actually act, which sounds like you've got a lot of energy for just naturally. How has embracing uncertainty shaped your approach to challenges? And how do you really build trust in your own resilience when facing the unknown?
Yes. I was trying to work out how I was going to answer this question because it is, it's one of those questions I'm like, whoa, how do I? It's very thought-provoking, so bear with me, everyone, while I navigate my answer.
Lots of thought-provoking questions on this podcast.
When I think about a scenario where I was totally out of control and I went through so many different emotions around the pandemic, being super scared, not just for myself, for my business, but also for my customers, for everyone around me, to be honest, for the globe. And I think that I remember feeling really, really anxious. I don't even have anxiety. It was the first time I was like, oh, this is what anxiety feels like. Wow, this is what people talk about. And then I went from being really grateful. I love being home with my husband and my son every single day. He was at work still. I was going into work because I was allowed to. But I loved what that did. And then also just hearing other people's story, knowing that I was okay, but then other people weren't. And that made me feel a little bit weird. Oh, why are you okay? What isn't? So what I worked out was that I think I'm really good at adapting. And maybe it's because I am an African immigrant and I've come to Australia. It's full of adapting. Every single day you're adapting, whether you're going into boardrooms when I worked corporate jobs, whether it was at university. I feel like because that's such part of what you do as an immigrant, you're constantly getting forced to be or having expectations of you that you're constantly molding and changing. It becomes a personality trait that you just easily adopt.
Yeah.
It's like you become a chameleon. You know, you go, okay, this is what it feels like to be that person. This is what people expect from me. It becomes something that you have learned over time to be able to do. I watched some of my friends and even my husband go through it and I was like, oh, what's the difference here? And I realized that he's never had to do it before. He's never had a lot of uncertainty where uncertainty has been my life story. So I feel like it's a really interesting thing that once you realize how instead of it being a barrier, it became my superpower in the end. I was like, oh, wow, this is why I get to be. And if I look at since the pandemic and now, how much more I've taken on as a superpower, now I'm like, I can do anything. Leah, I've been doing this my whole life. The world has gotten me ready for being able to adapt to for ever-changing world. So before I thought that's just the way I operated. Then I realized, oh, no, that is a skill set.
Yeah.
Okay, now you can actually do that for the rest of your life. And life is just about change. And you don't want it to be the same. You don't, Susie. You want it to be different and then loving and embracing when life is different all the time. And growth, don't you think?
100%. I'm nodding away here. I'm so on board. Absolutely. I'm intrigued to know, is Lorinda's personality similar to yours or are you different?
Yes and no. Everyone loves her. Like, people are like, oh, you're so great. And then they meet her and they're like, oh my God, I love your sister. No, because she's a real kind of that mum quality. She's trained as a nurse and you can see why.
Yeah.
She's like a warm hug. She's really, really like just soft. She's really, really creative as well. I've got some good thoughts too, but she's definitely the creative side and I'm more the operational, practical side.
Who's younger and who's older, by the way?
I'm the younger one. You're the younger. She's the older one.
Yeah. By how many years?
By two.
By two.
So then there is that quality as well. We're still sisters at the end of the day. She's sometimes, well, I'm the oldest. And then like, that means nothing in business. It really doesn't. But okay. You know. And it's been great working with my sister because it's like that kind of long relationship we've had since babies.
Yeah.
And building on that and understanding how each other works and our styles of working as well.
That's awesome.
Yeah.
It sounds like my dream to work with my sister on projects, to be honest.
Oh, really? So yeah. Many people say to me, like, how do you do it? I mean, I've got three sisters as well. I don't know if I'd work with all of my sisters.
We still love you, sisters, if you're listening to the podcast.
Yeah, still love you all. Oh, that's so good.
It's so beautiful hearing the story about Collective Closets and the people who come through your door and how you really, they experience this journey with you as they buy and then you tailor and you make it just for them. It's quite beautiful and something that you don't really today's fashion space. How do you cultivate and engage community around Collective Closets, especially when there is so much of fashion that's driven by trends and fleeting interests?
Because it's a small brand, I think that one of the things or one of the pillars we have always had was a two-way interaction. What can we give to our customers? What can they give to us? Yeah, obviously it's a commerce situation where you want people to buy, but I think that we've always wanted to have a brand that offered something to them when there was nothing to buy, like when there is nothing to buy, whether it's a conversation, whether it's information, whether it's even just a basic playlist. As a brand, it's just a very two-way kind of street. We've always thought that. I remember during the pandemic, we were like, no, this is not the time to sell. This is the time to listen. This is the time to really think about the world. And so we created in that downtime, what is it, Collective Conversations, which is just about celebrating really amazing women in our community and telling their stories. Some of them weren't even wearing Collective Closets. And we were like, that doesn't matter. These are the stories that people need to hear now to get them comfort, but also just to give them something else in the world. So Lorinda and I have always wanted that. And when we developed that series, we were getting lots of emails like, oh my God, this is so exciting. Oh, wow, thank you so much. Or, wow, I didn't know about this person and what they did. And so we worked out very early that that's what we wanted it to be, a relationship where we're giving and taking. And I think because customers feel that, then it's easy to build a community. We're also talking about things that actually concern us. Mm. So when I thought, you know, Lorinda and I are both mothers, we talked about that struggle, about our bodies changing and what that feels like, or just a different lifestyle. Sometimes we'll talk about like things just when you're not feeling great. This time we're talking about being your own muse, which is finding your power inside of you and changing your own life, or being the woman that you want to be and allowing yourself permission. We're out of the baby stuff. Our kids are at school. Now we're actually just being ourselves. We're giving ourselves full permission. And I feel like a lot of our customers are in that space. And so we're having conversations and we're wanting to hear. We're doing polls. We're asking people to send us emails just about who they want to be and how they're doing and what are they doing for themselves. What books are they reading? We're sharing that kind of content. So when our community is powerful, we're powerful. Mm. And I think that that is a really important transaction for us.
Mm. Yeah, that reciprocation is a really nice element that you've brought in and are really conscious of. And I think a lot of people, sometimes when they're building brands and businesses, they're not fully conscious of that. So I think it's quite beautiful that you're taking time and space to do that.
And I think that some of the best brands that I love do that as well. If I look at a brand that I'm engaged in, they're talking to me all the time. They're not just, here's a pair of pants, buy now, sale, pants, but you know, top. Mm. They're saying really interesting things. They're reflecting the woman that I want to be. And I'm like invested in that because I'm getting so much more. I'm becoming a better person through engaging in their brand, and that's what I want to build.
That's beautiful. We ask this question to everybody who comes onto the podcast, and I'm intrigued to know your answer. What are you feeling uncertain about at the moment, and how are you best supporting yourself?
Oh, well, I'm feeling very uncertain about this new collection. I am, because it's something we've never done before. We've never done the way that we're doing it. I think that fashion's changing so much, and we feel like every day it's a little bit uncharted waters. I think the brands that were really in 5 years ago, some of them don't even exist. It's really, really fast paced. It's sometimes really inauthentic. And so, well, that's what we're a bit uncertain about. What does it look like for our business if it doesn't go well? Are we still relevant? Are we still cool kind of vibe having a year off? And are we adding to the landscape or are we just taking? I think those are the things. And I think, I don't know, maybe we're overthinking it. Because then, you know, Lorinda sent me some photos today and I was like, oh yeah, that looks pretty cool. But it is. I think that I'm forever. And I think that doubt is a good thing. I never want to build things and not second guess myself.
Yeah.
Because I think second guessing means that you're assuring that this is right. You're taking things or you're making things that, you know, are long lasting or have an impact. And people want to wear. Like I said, I did one season and it didn't sell well. And I took it really personal because you do put a lot of your heart and your soul into it. You're like, why? Why doesn't this work? Like, we thought about this and this and this. So this is probably the first time I felt uncertain about producing a collection. But I think it's for the reasons because there's so many different things that we're doing. It's way more fashion than we've done before, where it would be like a bit more practical. We know that the world's changing the way people work. A lot of people would come to us for workwear. Mm-hmm. That's changed a little bit.
How has that changed, by the way?
Well, before I think that so many people would go to work Monday to Friday. Now lots of people go to work in an office, maybe 2 days a week. Mm-hmm. They're dressing for those 2 days. And so the items that they're buying are a little bit different. It's less formal. It's way more casual on where you're working. We can't say that for everyone.
Yes.
But I think as well as people are now more tuned into fashion, the brands, the trends are so driven. Mm-hmm. I walked into a big shopping center last week. It's the same. You know, when you're different, what does that mean? Does it still have a space? But I mean, at the same time, there's a lot of hope. The color trend at the moment, I'm sure you've seen it on Instagram. We're not using any of those. And before I wasn't so conscious about it, but I think I'm like, oh, what does that really mean? We're so to the left with this season. I also think it's fun. At the end of the day, fashion is fun.
Yeah.
You know, sometimes maybe I think some of the content is too science-based. This and this and that. I think this is a bit more fun. So I'm sure that there's a part of the internet and the world that is looking for some punchy, crazy fashion, and we're producing it this season.
I cannot wait to see this collection.
Okay, I'll definitely send you all the links of the photos.
Yes, please. We all want to see them.
Amazing.
Talk to me about the international aspect of where you're wanting Collective Closets to go.
I think this is the reason why we made the decision. So we were in New York to do a show for the Australian consulate, which was such a dream opportunity. We got an email and they're like, we'll fly you over. Oh my God.
Yes,
absolutely.
Please.
But in that they were like, can you do a collection that is where you're at now mentally? Which was really fun because we weren't thinking about the commercial value of it. We're just putting a collection for fun to show to a different audience. And when we were there, it was interesting because we're at this big event. And just hearing the feedback from this global audience. We sell internationally. So there were people at the event that were wearing our clothes. Oh my God, I'm a shopper. I'm a customer. So it wasn't like, oh my God, a whole new concept.
Yeah, yeah.
But what it did do, and this is the reason why we've also decided to then take some of that manufacturing overseas and build the brand a bit more global, because we realized that there is a spot for it. And it's really interesting. And there is a woman in New York, Tokyo, Lagos, London, you know, Melbourne, that is a Collector Closets woman.
Mm.
And I think for a long time, because we've been a little bit scared to take these big risks as well, we're always like, oh, we want to control everything. Where when we were in New York, they were like, where are you selling it at? Have you had a meeting with this person? And we realized that there's a lot of potential in it. We went to this really amazing exhibition at the MIT, which was really amazing. They had this African exhibition that was telling the stories of all of these designers that were American, that had African heritage.
Mm-hmm.
And it was so inspiring. Wow, these guys have really taken some risks. Like, they've gone, this is what we're doing, and we're going to do it in the biggest, most boldest way. And even though we were doing that, I think that we were doing it in this small way. We weren't giving ourselves enough permission. So I think that New York trip was really transforming for us because we're like, oh no, we could exist in this ecosystem. And we love our Melbourne audience. We love our Australian audience. Honestly, they've kept us alive. They're always, you know, buying and really supporting us. But I think it's our time now to take it a little bit bigger and expand it and find our tribe globally.
Thank you so much.
No, thank you.
For Tuma. If you're interested in learning more about Collective Closets, make sure to visit collectivecloset.com.au. or you can visit them on Instagram or Facebook, and you can find all these details in the show notes. Futuma, Collective Closets is not just a brand, but a source of empowerment, emotional resonance, and the cultural pride, creating a legacy that goes beyond selling clothes. It's been an absolute pleasure to be able to share, and thank you for sharing your talents with this world.
Thank you, Susie. Really, really lovely. Honestly, sometimes I pinch myself about how lucky we are to have so many people interested in what we do and platform us. So thank you for having us. We really appreciate it.
Absolute pleasure.
Thanks for checking in with me today. So you never miss an episode, hit follow or subscribe wherever you listen. If today's episode resonated, share it with someone who's navigating their own wobbly season. Find and follow us across Instagram, TikTok, Facebook, and LinkedIn at Let's Check In Podcast. This podcast is not a licensed mental health service, and it is not a substitute for professional mental health advice. If something has come up for you in this episode, you can call Lifeline on 13 11 14.